hardest thing for me to do in the studying of the offerings is to bring us back to that place, so that these weird sets of regulations and arcane little rules can have some life and meaning. You know, I immersed myself in it for years and years and years, just trying to empathize, to experience, to be. That's why I studied all that, to see what it was like, to feel what it was like to be there. But I've come to the conclusion it's damn near impossible to relate that by empathy. And it must be, I mean, maybe I'm just that bad of a teacher. I mean, I don't know. I'm not begging the question. I don't want anybody to go compliment or not compliment. I mean, I don't really care at this point. But everything about us as stealth, about us as teachers, from this point forward depends on your apprehension of the finished work of Christ in these offerings. I cannot overemphasize it enough. You know, it goes for the Levites as well as the Bible study teachers. You are, no matter who you are in a position of serving. In that position of service, you must have the wherewithal to serve it right. It's just, it's a metaphor for the lair. Or the lair is a metaphor for the spiritual condition. There is no excuse, for instance, in the lair for not serving attractive meals, placed attractively on the plate, because part of appetite, part of satisfaction comes from the place, from it being pleasing to the senses. After a year's time, there is no excuse why we don't have a menu rotation that is sustained, consistent, with enough variety by season so that we can take advantage of all the fresh food, so that we can, you know, do all the right things, served attractively. There's not that many people being served. The problem is those who are doing the work cannot visualize the perfection of what it, of what's required. Some of us, you know, some people can visualize it, others can't. Others have different degrees of requiring. I mean, they require different things. I mean, Doug would be satisfied with eating oatmeal, as long as it had the right nutrients in it. But that's a metaphor for what we are not doing with regard to these offerings. We are not serving attractive, nutritious meals in the lair because we are not serving attractive, nutritious meals spiritually. And it's because we haven't apprehended the perfection of his offering. And so all we can do is pick at it. We can take a complaint here and a little complaint there, and there's a little bit wrong. Well, I don't like this, I don't like that. This is wrong, this is wrong, that's wrong, this is wrong. There is no systemic look at the whole damn thing to see that that's what we are doing. What we are doing in the lair is what we're doing spiritually to the people in our Bible studies. Capiche? Now, that's why the lair is open. The lair is open for one singular purpose, and that's to serve the peace offering. The lair is open to be a lesson, a living lesson, to the teachers and the Levites that we might see. Does everybody understand that clearly by concept? Do you understand how easy it would be to make the decision to close the lair? What is it? What is it? Do you understand how easy it would be not to go through the crap of trying to study these offerings? Let's just study salvation. Let's just say, accept Jesus as your personal Savior and you'll be happy. Why can't we do that? Because we've tasted something different. We've tasted a greater meal, a far more, a gourmet meal we have tasted. And we can't be satisfied. That which used to satisfy us no longer satisfies. I remember for a period of about 7 or 8 weeks in that those years when I was looking for a church home. I really did look for a church home. Some of you don't think I did, but I really, really did. But I went to this one particular church because there was a good-looking skirt there. What? What? And I went for about 6 or 7 weeks. Doug's a whore. You can't say that was 20 years ago. It was only 19 years.
Only 19.
You were young then.
It was like yesterday.
You were just in high school.
You were 33. I was even in high school.
Yeah, I was 33.
Yes, you were.
Yeah, I was barely in high school.
Anxious.
7 weeks, 6 or 7 weeks, I can't remember. But I heard the same message every week, every Sunday. A salvation message. It was always surrounded by a couple of bad anecdotes or sweet testimonies. But fundamentally, it was the same message. And I thought to myself, and I was thinking about that today. I said, I mean, what was it? What was it? Why did my life would be so much simpler if I could have just accepted that? I mean, it would have been so easy to just accept the salvation message. That's you know, in the fundamentalist churches. You know why I couldn't accept the salvation? And I would have. The reason I couldn't accept the salvation message is because my gonads wouldn't let me. Because I knew there had to be something else. You understand? I mean, I would have loved to be able to just sit around and accept that. Now, what's happened to us here? It's like every time we turn around, we're pushing a new frontier. But I'm not too sure we have apprehended what we've left behind. We've got 100 and some tapes.
940.
Anyway, back here, their average length is 75 minutes each, medium edited, on the mysteries of the universe, from the meaning of the signs of the zodiac, to the meaning of the Great Pyramid, to the meaning of these offerings, to the meaning of the ashes of the red heifer, to the meaning of language, to the meaning of time. And if we wanted to go reference one of them, it's nigh unto impossible. You know, Harry's tried, but Harry is not an archivist. Harry didn't have the mind to be an archivist.
It's like 700 days worth of tapes.
Huh?
It's worth 700 days worth of tapes.
No, it's more than that.
I mean, continuously, night and day.
Oh.
Well, I don't think you'd want to do that.
Harry used to try to edit the tapes when he was high on grass, and that was bad enough.
No, I just tried to listen to one when I was high. All I heard was, this is going to be this.
No, that's what I want to talk to Fred about. He didn't know that yet, but that's what I want to talk to Fred about tomorrow.
You did what Doug did.
Yeah.
I'm just going to talk to him.
It worked, didn't it?
I learned it to do the next one.
But we have to see that by the finished work of Christ, there is never a situation that can arise in time and space which justifies putting your eyes on yourself. That's the fullness of the meaning of the offerings. Do you understand that? You can never arrive at a place in time and space where there is any lack, where there's any need to put your eyes on yourself. And that's, if we go from salvation all the way around towards, but this book, fundamentally, the apprehension of it and the apprehension of the finished work of Christ causes you to go through time and space in all dimensions, never ever having to put your eyes on yourself. Can you understand that? To never ever consider what's going to happen to you tomorrow. To never ever have to consider that there is a situation that can confront you for which there isn't sufficient. That's a mind-blowing thing. That is the definition of freedom. Anybody can be free if you're freedom, I mean, you see, if you define your parameters real narrow, you can be free. You can prove anything if your outlook is sufficiently limited. But we are of a people that say, the test must be everywhere, at all times, in every condition. And if it doesn't meet that test, then something is wrong. But what we do instead, in these little Bible study groups, is we provide solutions. Rather than reveal Christ. Do you understand that? We sit around and discuss someone's problems and their solutions rather than show them Jesus Christ. And when that happens, then a condition takes place. And this high place activity becomes a whirlwind. Because the people that are in the body feel totally uncovered. And they have to resort to the high place devices. There's no cross. You know, that's what we talked about this while you guys were gone, but the members become as ravening wolves because they gain their sustenance from chewing on the flesh of either the ones that are in need and elderly or the newborn. You understand? They go and consume. There's a new person here. Ha! Let's go get him! And they consume and chew on him. Or there's one that's sick and's got a problem. And they run and chew and consume on him until there's nothing left but the raw bones, and then they throw it out. Do you understand?
So, I mean, it'd be an indicator that they're not being fed enough spiritually that they have to chew on.
Well, your father sacrificed. They don't see him sacrifice. We're all going to look for sacrifice. We don't apprehend it.
There's no condition, there's no situation that you can be confronted with where the offering, his offering, hasn't completed the cost and paid the price. Not just paid the price, with provided access. Do you understand? That's why the blood is there's so much tremendous mystery in the blood of Christ. Those churches that I was talking about, that church that I visited, they only have the salvation message. They're under the blood of the Passover, hiding out in Egypt, waiting for God to come. Still the blood of Christ. But it's not the purpose of God. It's only the entrance. Do you understand? It's just the beginning of the system. Now, so we take them farther. We say, okay, you can get through the blood there, and then you can go to the Passover, you can see the meaning of the Passover, then you can cross the Jordan even, and you can even get to the temple. You can even get to the door of the tabernacle, and there's the... But all we take them to is the altar. The brazen altar. And there at the brazen altar, you have to sprinkle the blood in the brazen altar, or otherwise there can be no access. Every time it talks about blood, it's talking about access. You understand that? And so we've taken them. Where have we taken them? We've only taken them to the brazen altar, the altar of judgment. Take him to the labor. Let's bring him some blood on the labor and take him to the labor. Then let's sprinkle some blood on the candlestick. And sprinkle blood on the table of showbread. And sprinkle blood on the altar, the golden altar of incense. And finally, sprinkle blood on the veil. Then go in and sprinkle blood at the base of the holy place. The Holy of Holies, and then climb, bring them, present them perfect on the mercy seat. But we've stopped them at the altar, at the brazen altar. Why? Because all that we have, as a body, have apprehended is the sin and trespass offering, sort of. And most of that's done outside the camp. All we've done is sort of taken a peek inside the door and looked at the brazen altar and said, oh God, that's bad. That's the cross. That's death. I don't know. I've tried. And I mean, I don't know what to do. If you're outside the linen, then what you'll do, all you'll do is, no matter how much blood you throw on them and sprinkle on them, all it will be is solving problems and landering, enabling. But our job is to present every man and woman perfect in Christ. That means to present them, and the Lamb was slain from before the foundation of the world. It doesn't require the passage of time, it requires apprehension. I'm going to shoot that thing.
Unless they rip the goddamn wires out.
It's our children that keep holding him up.
That's crazy.
Well, I mean, that's fine. I mean, it doesn't. They have just as much right as we do.
I consider it disturbing.
They're also eating sugar.
Am I touching anybody? Is anybody hearing me? Or?
What was that? When the children of Israel came out of Egypt and they crossed the Jordan, I mean, they crossed the, wherever they crossed?
Red Sea.
And they were like in a place and they were being fed manna. They got real tired of eating manna every day. What is manna?
What
does
it mean?
What is it?
Like bread or something.
What is it?
That's what it means. What is it?
We hadn't quite got to the altar yet, Olin. We're still working on the Red Sea.
The manna.
And we're approaching the golden calf at some point.
Uh-oh.
I don't even know what half of them know what a covering is.
Funny you would say that.
Well, I don't know what this means, but I have a real reaction in me to what you've been saying, which is the thing of all the nights that we sat here and talked about the offerings, the thing that is the most real to me is the description of the flour and how the flour is prepared for the meal offering. That has just really stayed in front of my eyes since we talked. And as you were talking, my internal reaction was that it's like we started at one end and we worked to the other, and now it's time to go from where we are back to the other end.
Well, here's the promise. And this is either true or we're wasting our time. For by one offering he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. He hath perfected forever. Whereof the Holy Ghost also is a witness to us, for after that he said before, this is the covenant that I make with them. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law into their hearts, and in their minds will I write them, and their sin and iniquity will I remember no more. Now, it says that the law it's already in our heart, in our mind. It's already there. That's either there, and we are perfected. And now what we are doing is working out that perfection in fear and trembling. Or we're lost. Or we have to go start memorizing scriptures. And as some of you are really lost, if we have to memorize scripture.
But I am getting a memory course. Just be good this week.
You know, we do disservice to the mystery when we fall back into the world's ways. And what we do is it says where remission of these is, there is no more offering for sin. It has never worked in the first place. I mean, every time we've tried to, I'm thinking of this, all of these. All we can do is present Jesus. All we can do is present the cross. All we can do is say, die, that he might live. Now, and here's what it means. Here's the blueprint. It's like we have an atomic reactor of the ultimate, hugest kind there is. His name is Jesus. And then these offerings are the schematic diagram. Here's what it means. When he, he says, the Ephesians says that he stands for us. And we've talked about this, but he is for us without the camp. He is for us put upon the altar. He is for us bearing our sin. He is for us accepted and satisfied. Now, when we hear that for us, we think of it as instead of us, and that's really what religion teaches. And therefore, the religion itself teaches separation. And so we can never quite get to it. We can never quite get it. We think that we have to memorize it, or we have to apprehend it some special way, or we have to do something different. But we miss the point. He didn't just do it for us. When he was judged, he did it as us. You understand that difference? When he was judged as us. When he kept the law as us. When he was accepted as us. When he was satisfied as us. Now that is so far from some of your minds that it sounds like I'm speaking Greek. But it's you at each one of those points.
Yeah, I've always heard he died as us, and I understood that, but I never heard all that together. And it's all in one.
When we look at the offerings, they show us Christ. But the scriptures say that as he is in the world, so are we. So when we look at the offerings and the mystery of the offerings, then we have to see it happening as us. Do you understand? That's the only way it'll have life. Otherwise, it'll be just some other ideal you're trying to meet, or something else you're trying to follow, or some other program you can't meet. And you have to come to the possibility that that everything you've ever heard about Christ is wrong. Unless that you've apprehended in some mysterious way that when he was accepted as you. When he was satisfied as you. He's just another ideal that you'll never meet. Almost, Tyra and I went Wednesday night. No, what day is it today? Today's Wednesday. Monday night. It wasn't Monday. It was Sunday night. It was after the group. We went to Denny's and had some dessert in Mesquite Denny's. And it was, it was about 9:15 or something. In come, there was more hairspray per square foot than I've ever seen in my life, I think, in one group of people. And they all had on a particular look. And they all had that sweetness. There's no makeup, but they had, there was makeup, but there wasn't any lipstick. This hair that went all over, but perfectly in the there wasn't even one hair out of shape. It was just perfectly coiffed.
Is that like the word? A hair helmet.
Wow. It's a hair helmet. Coiffed. They all had on a particular look that went out in 1938. I don't care about fashion normally, but what bothered me was the uniformity of it. And they uniformly, everything was predictable. Okay, now they sat and they ordered and they smiled sweetly at each other and they grabbed hands and prayed. I got so mad that Tyra had to get me out of there.
I'm so glad I wasn't there. It would be worse than the bag of churches.
They are presenting our Father as a uniformly boring idiot.
I had a funny response in when we were in Hot Springs, flipping the channels on the TV, we come across that Larry Lee exhibition, and we sat there and listened for a minute, and not only his message was so ridiculous about the house burning and how he led it into how he was going to plant more, give more, he was going to find more to give, he was going to make himself the seed, he was going to do this, and he was exhorting his followers to do the same, i.e. send him more, so he could do more of what he was going to do. It was just all this contrived crap. And then he talked about how it was, he had just met with some 350 pastors in Europe who, in some vein, are doing what he's doing, and they're trying to do this international push on this same shit. And just, I just, for the first time, got
a taste of what you've been pissed off about for so long. It's like it's getting rampant and worldwide and more ridiculous and so far from what's true that it's into insanity. And
is somebody you know too?
And it's they married him. Larry Lee married.
My real response was I wanted a divorce and get married.
But hear me. This is what's going out in the name of God about our Father. It's not just, you know, I'm off tilt. I'm kind of bored with tilt. I mean, not really, but I mean, all these other guys. I mean,
in our place, then to go into those churches. I mean, not just. I mean, to go there and be there. I mean, if I think about Paul, I mean, he went into these places, you know.
He went into a place. He didn't go to the... Paul went into the synagogues.
Yeah.
Where there was an encouragement to speak.
I know. There's
These aren't the synagogues. These are analogous. These are the bathhouses that John prayed would fall on Corinthians. There's no commonality. Zero.
Well, we all came out of them.
Still no commonality. Then we must go and speak over their heads. Well, it's in a whole lot of places. It's preaching that gain is godliness.
What messed with my mind was the word of faith is where I went through one time. There's this one lady that they laid hands on her and stuff, and she just went sterile, screaming. They told her to get rid of her, you know, get her out of there. But some people weren't healed, and it was their lack of faith, or and I think it ruined so many people's lives, you know, from their lack of faith,
Oh yeah, it's always. I mean, we've gone through this before. I mean, it goes from there must be hidden sin, then there must be demons. Right? If God's in the business of meeting all your greed and it isn't met, well, then obviously you've got hidden sin in your life. Well, if the hidden sin trip doesn't work on you, then pretty soon there's demons. I mean, it's got to be excused because there's no preaching of the cross. There's no suffering. They preach that gain is godliness. They preach they're enemies of the cross, that God is their belly is their God. Now, the problem is that we have to see that how much alike that we are. You know, how much alike that gain is our, you know, that we think gain is godliness. How much alike we think that when something is going, quote unquote, easily, that we think we're in God's blessing. How rare it is for us to glory in tribulation. How rare it is for us to, you know, not think that suffering is strange. If we think that suffering, you know, the moment we're suffering, oh my God, I got to figure out some way to get out of it. I mean, all of that exists for us so that we might see, so that we might repent. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the other standpoint, what's the chaff to the wheat? We believe, therefore we speak. We'll speak at every opportunity, at every place, at every time. I have never refused a speaking engagement. And I've spoken, I mean, if you stop and think of the number of places I've spoken since I've been a believer and the number of people I've spoken to, it's amazing.
Well, based on what I saw, well, partly based on what I saw at the town hall, religious town hall thing with supposed church leaders and supposed intellectuals and supposedly people that could sit and talk about something. I see no desire whatsoever for dialogue. I see no desire whatsoever for any kind of conversation about anything real. It was ridiculous. I mean, he'd sit there and say some amazing thing, and these guys would go, oh, maybe it's going to rain this afternoon.
Well,
bizarre thing. Really bizarre.
I mean, that's, I mean.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the people,
there's no desire.
We have that. The same thing. You talk to people.
There's certainly no desire here to gain is not godliness.
Can you,
anywhere.
I mean,
anywhere.
Part of that. Yeah.
Nobody wants
it's like that verse.
We don't want to hear.
Seek ye first the kingdom of God and all these things shall be added unto you. Well, if you want something and you can't get it by knowing that if you seek God that you'll get it, the act of, you know, of doing what you think is seeking God to attain this other, that's...
It's called whoredom.
Yeah. Nobody wants to hear that message.
Well, I think... Let me tell you what I think. I think there's an army of people that are ready to hear it. I think that there are people dying in each of those churches that are ready to hear it. But more importantly, I think there are people who have rejected those churches that are ready to hear. They're all over. I spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks with wizened, hardened media kind of people that are, you know, that have seen it all. And I got to tell you, they're blown away by us. The fact that we even exist. You're blown away by somebody that would, and a group of people who would believe that all is vanity when they know it's all vanity. That's their job. Their fourth estate is to, I mean, I promise you that he hasn't lit the light to keep it under a bushel basket. And I promise you we've been under, every once in a while the bushel basket's been lifted up like that. Just a little bit, but
this thing you said about food and serving the food and everything just hit me. And I was thinking about tonight over there at the Laird, you know, we had the shrimp creole or something, and it was spicy. You know, I don't like spicy food that much. I like a little bit of spice, but not great big chunks of spice. But to other people, it's not great big chunks of spice. To other people, they just gobble it on down. And if I was preparing the meal, I wouldn't put hardly any spice in it. And it's the same kind of thing in a Bible study. You know, I prepare a Bible study just basically for me. You know, if it falls together and I kind of understand it, then it's probably, you know, that's where I quit. You know, it's like, wow, this thing's falling together in my understanding. But it's not thinking about preparing it for other people. You know, if you're in charge of preparing it for other people, you put in the spices, you do this, you do that, you know. You're free to do whatever. It doesn't have anything to do with you, really.
But the real thing that you know is you know what the people want. You know what the people need.
They need, yeah, what their desires are. And what
it's like, have any of you ever flown first class on Lufthansa across the ocean? I mean, you haven't. I mean,
can't say that.
I'm first class.
Lufthansa.
Place
that,
you know,
Lufthansa has a class that's above first class, and they have there's only 12 or 13 seats, depending on the configuration.
Illuminati class. Yeah. Those guys are always flying back and forth.
Jack Nicholson.
Well, I rode there going to Germany and back.
Don't tell anybody else.
Yeah, but you
that's
were with,
Illuminati.
You were with.
Anyway, they had a single chef that, there was one chef that took care of the needs of these people on the trip over. But that's in enough, and everything was prepared from scratch, even in the air. But that's still not it. What was it is, his assistant contacted every seat holder before the flight. To find out what their food preferences and allergies or desires were. I mean, it's not that big a deal here. I mean, to find out what, I mean, I keep trying to say that. There's not that many people. It seems like it when you're in a rush, but if you're not, if
find out if he likes it which way.
Well, but to see what to with love find out what they need, not as a justify themselves. I mean, you understand? Not to just get by, but to find out what will serve, what will meet their needs in love. It's a job of love. That's why, I mean, it's a job of honor. That's why I love Europe. The restaurants, the waiters in Europe, it's a big deal.
But waiter, if you name the public.
To be a chef in Europe, you start out, it takes years. You start out as a, you know, the salad preparation, and slowly you become a sous chef, and you go into different. But it's an art form. It's an honor to move into that. It's an honor to serve. And that's the closest thing. It's like serving royalty. And that's the closest thing we have here. To what that kind of, like down at the French Room, or it's the closest thing we have to on earth right now to what serving the peace offering is about. But it's that's the only reason God made us to eat, so that we would understand the mystery. Now, I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know if it's going to take sitting down and I mean, daily Bible studies with the crew so that they can begin to understand the offerings or what it is, but somehow, this mystery of the offerings has to be integrated into the lair. They have to be apprehended by us. The idea, I mean, this whole idea that we are now accepted in the Beloved, and to eat in that mood or understanding of acceptance, so that, you know, that's why you shouldn't eat if there's not joy. What we do when you remember what we do when the weddings, when there's a, if you have the party there and there's no joy in the house, you leave. Well, it's that kind of a thing. I don't have any answers. I just know that there's a more of the mystery to be seen here than we're seeing. Anybody understand a little bit? You know, the two things are, I just think this is true. I haven't really studied it out, but the idea that there would be salt is the component of eternity. The idea that there would be frankincense is the component of joy. And the joy is not sensory. The joy is something that has to pass through that fire, because otherwise it tastes bitter. But especially this group, you have to I mean, I can't always be the bad guy. Do you understand that? I mean, it's always Oli is the bad guy because he chews out people or he does this or does that. You have to be the bad guys also. Not necessarily the bad, but you have to make sure, I mean, that's your place. But don't do well. They. There's no more they. It's we. They is the evil son, the evil child, the one that will always be alone. We will be conformed to the image of Christ. What they do, the moment they comes into the picture, you might as well have taken an Uzi and murdered everybody. Because you've separated yourself and elevated yourself. And I don't care what your eating needs are. If that lair can't meet them, and if it can't meet the needs of the most needy or the least of these, then we shouldn't be doing this. Because of food allergies, real or imagined, has to eat by herself, then we're a failure. Does everybody understand that? No. In this line, we have to do something about Saturday night and Sunday morning.
Saturday night and Sunday
Saturday. Morning. My suggestion is that Saturday nights, each of the Seder groups take turns, like the Saturday night bananas would be responsible for purchasing, preparing, and serving. The following week, another Seder group. The following week, another Seder group. Serve wine, have candles on the tables, and have a wonderful Saturday night dinner.
What do you mean? Like a...
Turn it into a restaurant on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Into a restaurant.
There's too many...
I have an alternate suggestion to that. That on Saturday nights, those people who generally don't have any place else, that they come into the homes of other people, and that, you know, as you know, we used to do this quite often, we'd meet together and do something together and meet, you know, people that I don't normally see and have them over, you know, and do that home to home a little bit more. And we enjoy
meeting.
Well,
the problem with that is there's now 73 people.
There's no reason both things can't
be. Yeah, we can do both things. But,
Yeah. Seder, like maybe like Bible study groups get together, you know, and have this interchange. Like, you know, Doug didn't have a whole lot of places where his group can do something like that, but there are, you know, or they're, you know, I can do something at our house. We might meet a little more group to group, but we don't do that. And people oftentimes make mention, I really don't know anybody, and I would like to see some of that, you know, somehow. If, you know, maybe a part of this suggestion could play into that, it would be enjoyable.
What's going on that
for? Well, what goes on is the people that
depend on the lair.
The people that depend on the lair
don't have any
place to go. No money or no place to go.
Saturday or Sunday, Everyone disappears to their destination. Gym. Couples pair off and go to their destinations. And then there's single people and most of them new on the street.
There's all kinds of people that Saturday evening and Sunday morning become the loathsome times.
Yeah, they're there's abandoned kind of feeling.
Because everybody goes to their own place.
I would like something that wasn't institutionalized, that maybe it cost a little, incorporates what you're saying, where you do give back something, and I think you gain from it. That's the idea, really do have that opportunity.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, it's pretty much what you're saying. Just use that facility. Use that facility to say, this is Banana's house, come for dinner. Or this is so-and-so's house, come for dinner.
Well, unfortunately, I feel like a lot of times that will fall to the ones that it always falls to. There are those that are gonna participate. They're gonna prepare. I don't know how to do some Bananas, but when we do things as a group, there's a few that always seem to take care of it. And maybe we could do it like
that.
We used to enjoy, when we do the thing out here on Fridays, like we used to do, like the grilling. Everybody bring your own.
That's what I like to do.
We could certainly, this, while it's still pleasant, it would be, those were interesting.
Well, obviously there's a need, but the problem, there's again, one of the reasons that things become convoluted is we are still searching for this meaning of community. And it's a struggle because there's the community at large, and then there's the smaller communities of the Bible studies or the set of groups. The problem, and it's been a struggle ever since the beginning of time. You can read about the struggles in Judges or Joshua even. I don't know what the answer is. We're faced with it constantly with the Levites in terms of problems, but, because they work for the foundation and yet they're in somebody's Bible study. I don't think there's an answer. I think that it's always going to be it's always going to be a point of tension. The Talmud has a whole lot of information about a community. The community is a community when it's 120 people. At that point, then it's they're almost expelled. You're forced into creating another community. The community isn't allowed to get any larger than that. We're at that point in Bananas. Bananas has 24, 25 people in it. Something's got to break. It's gone past reasonableness. But there's always the battle between the sense of community and the sense of provincialism. That battle, it's always there. Our identity isn't, our identity is worked out, but yet we have to have the identity of the greater picture, not just the community, but the body of Christ in all of time and space. So, this is just an example of it. I think both can be met somehow.
I'm glad you brought it up, because it is too. I don't think that it's one of those things, unless preaching comes, you don't consider and really think about, that other people, they get lonely. And if we are wrapped up in our Saturday night programs, our routines that we do, and the truth of it is, a lot of times you just don't want to break your routine. you kind of reserve, and I've heard you speaking about this, about reserving your private time, and I think it's more that there's people who are just,
Let's put a face on it.
Put a face on it.
The face of it is just, sir.
Yeah.
People that have a drug problem, that when they're left in that aloneness, and they feel that they've been expanded, then they're,
have lived all, probably most of their life on the outside, and, they may well be continuing to live, except for the times of Bible study, they may well be continuing to live a life on the outside, and the others. They live in the...
When I first got here, we had them over to eat, a number, just like the first few weeks they were around, the Saturday nights and everything. And that allowed us to just break through and actually get to know them. It was very important.
So I'm glad you could
break through
stuff. The idea that some of these people, there's people that are coming very precious, the idea that they might, be wasting away and not, he had a slip the other day. But it didn't go into one of these power dives, because he there was enough of connection and enough affection, it seemed like, especially toward Joyce Anna and not wanting to disappoint her, that it caught him, almost suspended him in the midst of it, and brought him back. And I think they shall know you are my disciples by your love one to another. And I think what's more, it'll save a lot of our butts.
Yeah.
Whenever any of us think about really leaving, there's that, that fuzzy warm spot that, that just nags at you until you have to face up to stuff.
Where are you, Gary? Something's... I feel a disturbance.
Well, I'm hearing this stuff and feel quite guilty about it.
Well, me too. I was guilty when I put the words out.
Yeah. All the time. But I guess on vacation, when you get away, you look back and say, what's going on? And it's been, it's time for something new to take place. There's the idea of Bible study is not really serving meal, not really revealing Christ, not really.
Let me say one of the things that again, I don't want to make bananas the role model for anything, but what we try to do is that if there's a problem, we send the problem out with the elder or elders, so that it just becomes
every night, all night.
It's just crazy. And cause the Shema to be read. Cause them to have the problem solved before they come into the Shema.
Yeah.
Let not the sun go down on yet that anger. Let it happen. Let it be dealt with instantly. No, this little stuff about crap building up. We saw the fruit of crap building up.
Oh yeah.
Huh? You're never going to let that build up again, are you? Huh?
I was gone, for those that don't know.
She left. She was history.
I already had 10 jobs, and I was moved. I was gone.
5 foot 2 pile of crap.
Little shit.
It wasn't quite so good anymore.
I
couldn't
explain
the body of Christ.
Send out elders, take care.
And then, just as a practical matter, we have to decide, as a board of directors and as a body of elders, whether or not to start another group within. Start another banana, or whether to try to put the people elsewhere. my tendency is to start another group, because I don't. Okay.
You know, start another group. Sure.
I mean, there's
one of your folks.
Split in everybody there. Up. And there's just.
Okay.
No, they that way there's not the sense of just being splintered. There's a piece of
and just redistribute.
Group. Yeah, because it never
works.
They never get over it. You know.
We don't want
to
even add a guest
host.
I'm sorry, I've dealt with this
thing before. Bunches of cousins and they just, you know, move next door or something.
In fact, in my group, we start the policy of reversing that, so we're giving our guest host to bananas.
speaking of a long line of cousins, cats with three heads.
Anybody have anything else?
Paris.
Just that if we do this thing, to me it sounds like it'd be like if we're going to rethink the whole Lair deal and have a committee and do everything, you know.
Do
the
what?
Idea, well, you know.
What committee?
Didn't you have a food committee?
We have a food committee.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh.
Well, whatever precipitated this discussion tonight about the Lair, obviously it's going to.
Carrot and apple dessert.
Yeah, what? Obviously, something's going to happen, so I'm saying, you know, it's like in the rotation, all that stuff you're talking about. If you had it, you know, all the food's over there anyway, you know, it'd be a deal where, you know, we could either we're contributing money that night and serve it, or, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't,
whatever,
the money isn't an issue. I mean, what we do is, what we would obviously do is, like, increase the weekly cost by a dollar or two or something, and then you're still on a fixed price, or you pay for that
just
meal.
Just not have those guys mess with it those nights at all.
Right.
Did my Bible study.
Yeah, but the
I don't know if it's just me, but I got to say, because it's all, I mean, you're talking about using the Lair for Saturday night and Sunday morning. The people you're talking about are there every day.
Yeah.
And I would think it would be a lot healthier. Them to have changed pace,
well, they're not.
Home,
no, we're not talking about them doing the work.
No. I'm
just talking about a different place to be.
I think it's a good idea to do it in the backyard and
bring them in your
different things.
Well, but again, how many can you hold?
Well, you hold, you know, so much.
I
don't know that we're going to ever have a program. I mean, you've spoken it, and I don't want to forget that these people are there.
Okay. But I'm saying that if we
fall apart, though, it's like that'll for a week or two we'll do that, but then we won't do it anymore. It's like that it's too.
The need is real. The need is right now. There's X number of people who, in some instances, have no money and no food on Saturday night and Sunday morning. It's not a theory. It's a need that has to be met. And it has to be dealt with. I don't think this should replace the idea of Bible studies getting together and doing the things. But it, in my read of it, it doesn't seem like it would work. I mean, we got over half the people that would be in need don't have any transportation. I'm not saying that.
And they would feel like they were imposing every time. I think they would feel like they were imposing. Like, oh, you've got to have me over to dinner.
The token thing. Yeah. I mean,
well, what we were doing at our house for a long time, or what, you know, Margaret and Wade would get together and we would have breakfast up there and call everybody up. Now that kind of petered out when.
Well, I know that. I mean, and those.
Out of money, but it was a neat thing.
Yeah. And again, that's the problem when those kinds of, if it doesn't have a way of doing it, then it just peters out. I mean, it there's nothing to sustain it. We'll come up with something.
You know,
I don't know what's up.
Pray about it.
Yeah. See what, there's no decisions that are made now, so. But just try to make sure that everybody in your groups have either food and or money or a place to eat on Saturday night and Sunday morning.
Somewhere between institutionalism and sincerity.
From those extremes.
The best.
Yeah. there's something.
Territory.
Okay. Anybody have anything else?